lighting the way with positive energy and love. HRNradio.com.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Powell to the People, live on the radio. I'm Wayne Powell, and we have a really exciting and informative show for you today. We have dedicated environmentalist Craig Cadwallader. Welcome, Craig.
Hi, Wayne. Thank you for inviting me today.
And we've had Craig on the show before, and he was, you know, of course, you've been the longtime chair of Surfrider South Bay, and the last time you were here, you talked primarily about Surfrider, but now we're going to broaden, talk about a number of environmental issues that are not just unique to Manhattan Beach or the beach cities, but pretty much everywhere on this planet. Of course, you know, Surfrider is a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to protecting the ocean and the beaches through conservation, research and education. But most people already know, but for those of you who don't, Craig has been a lifelong dedicated environmentalist. Craig was previously on the show, and he's going to give us a lot of insight about how we can make our planet more green and sustainable. So let's start out right off the bat. You know, Manhattan Beach was one of the first cities to ban single-use plastic bags, take-out plastic bags. And, of course, the city was sued by the plastic bag manufacturers. And to make a long story short, it went all the way up to the California Supreme Court that ruled in the city's favor. And then the manufacturers said, well, let's still, you know, first of all, a number of cities joined in on the bandwagon, a number of counties, and then even the state. And then the bag manufacturer says, well, let's get an initiative, a misleading initiative on the ballot. And that was Prop 67. But there was also Proposition 65, which ultimately passed. And, you know, the thing is, we residents who live along the beach, when the bags go down through stormwater runoff into the ocean, or even just on the beach, or when they go into the landfills, but particularly in the beach, the adverse impact on the marine ecosystem is something that when you see, you know, fish and birds and whatever who ingest the plastic or get entangled in the plastic, it's just something we don't want to see. Talk about that, Craig.
Yeah, the bag ban initiative, especially in the state of California, was something we've been working on for many, many years. And as you mentioned, the city of Manhattan Beach was an early pioneer and I guess in a sense paid the price by being sued and having to pursue that through the state Supreme Court. And fortunately, we prevailed on that, as it should have been. And in the end, we had a large coalition of NGOs, non-governmental organizations, working to pass a statewide bag ban. And we did that by starting at the grassroots level, as we call it, going city by city. In the end, we had 151 single-use bag bans passed before we were able to get the statewide bag ban passed, and it is the first state in the United States to pass a full bag ban. Hawaii had done this, but by combining their counties together. So California is the first state to do this, and we hope to set that standard for the rest of the country.
And everywhere I go, I have my reusable bags, you know, reduce, reuse, recycle, all of that.
Yeah, and I have a trunk full of them in my car. I give them out all the time. And it's really a simple process. Once you get used to using reusable bags, which I've been doing for about 8 years now, it pretty much becomes ingrained as a habit. But a lot of people now have been using single-use bags and just throwing them away or put them in a closet somewhere. And they need to just kind of shift to a new habit, basically. And we're really not interested in people switching from plastic to paper bags because paper bags have their own greenhouse gas input. They use a lot of water and they have their own problems. But at least when those get out in the environment, they will decompose, unlike plastic, which is around basically forever. So we want people to use reusable bags and get off the single-use throwaway habit.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking about plastic, on my show previously, I had Captain Charles Moore, who wrote the book Plastic Ocean, and it's all about the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, where all the plastic that goes into the ocean migrates. Talk about that.
Well, yeah, the plastics in the, it's the North Pacific Subtropical Gyre, which is the Pacific Garbage Patch that Captain Moore discovered and popularized, and he's a personal friend and a hero of mine. Mm-hmm. that has been variously mischaracterized as a floating island of trash twice the size of Texas, when in fact it's actually like a soup of little plastic bits that break down and float at various levels subsurface depending on the buoyancy of the plastic itself. These are the items that fish and birds ingest thinking it's food, and it can in some cases fill the animal's stomach up and starve them to death, or the toxicity of the plastic itself, which absorbs pollutants out of the water. The longer it's in the water, the more polluted it becomes. It could actually poison the animal. And we're trying our best to keep that plastic out of the ocean. A recent statistic that is quite frightening was the World Economic Forum projected if we don't change what we're doing by the year 2050, plastic will actually outweigh fish in the ocean. Mm. And to me, that is shocking and completely unacceptable. So we're moving forward on what we can. The bag ban was one item. We are now heavily involved in polystyrene bans. In fact, I'll be at the city of Long Beach and their city council meeting tomorrow night to speak on that. And last Monday, we were in the city of Culver City working with city council there to try to get a polystyrene food service item banned in that city. And I just worked, supplied some comments about Maui County working on their own polystyrene ban. So,
and I've seen where sea lions have ingested plastic and polystyrene, also known as styrofoam, or the beer can or any type of can, those six-pack plastic things
the rings,
they,
yeah.
where they get entangled in those.
Mm-hmm. And it's really the plastic is everywhere, and I challenge people to go on any beach in the world, scoop up a handful of sand, and look carefully and sort through it. And I challenge somebody not to find bits of plastic there. And I've waited yet for somebody to tell me they've done it and not found plastic. So it's ubiquitous. It's getting everywhere in the environment, and obviously unhealthy to wildlife. And it's unhealthy to us in the sense that who wants to live in trash? And a clean, trash-free environment is better for everybody, and so that's what we're working towards.
And I know when you go from event to event, and particularly the beach cleanups, but you have that one bottle that's filled with ocean plastic?
And in fact, that is a sample that I got from Algalita Marine, Captain Moore's organization in Long Beach, where they actually collected that from the so-called garbage patch, and it does show plankton, and it shows bits of plastic, and as they actually collected it out some 2,500 miles out in the ocean, and the it's undeniable the plastic that's floating in that. It's kind of shocking, and the I believe in that part of the Pacific that the plastic outweighs the plankton something like 8-1 already. Mm-hmm. And this is only going to get progressively worse as the single-use plastics we use get into the environment. The expanded polystyrene is particularly bad, like the single-use plastic bags. It's very lightweight. It blows around easily. And it's the only product that breaks into tiny little pieces because of the way it's manufactured. And it's those tiny little pieces that do the damage, almost impossible to clean up. And it's made from styrene, which is a reasonably expected carcinogen that leaches out of polystyrene food service items into the food and beverages that are contained. And 100% of humans who have been tested have styrene in their fat tissue. And I don't know about you, I don't want a carcinogen in my fat tissue.
And if you're ever at any of the events or next year, I believe it's April 20th or 21st or something like that, third Saturday in April, there's Earth Day, and we're going to have a special show that precedes that. But if you see the Surf Rider booth, Craig will be there, and it's amazing about all of the environmental, the marine environmental concerns there are. So let's talk about polystyrene, the city of Manhattan Beach banned it.
Yes, and particularly proud of Manhattan Beach, which up until July was a world leader in a very comprehensive polystyrene ban. In fact, was the strongest in the world until San Francisco upped the ante. But that particular ordinance, which was modified in 2014, includes the expanded polystyrene, which a lot of people inappropriately call styrofoam. That's actually a brand name by Dow Chemical that's used for building insulation. They never have made food service items, but everybody refers to it as styrofoam improperly. But expanded polystyrene, and there's a rigid form of polystyrene called oriented polystyrene. And those two items are banned in Manhattan Beach, and it includes the foam or expanded and rigid for cup lids, straws, utensils, clamshells, coffee cups, and polystyrene coolers, if they're not encapsulated in a more durable material. We often find cooler bits broken up on the beach where people use them once and leave them behind. So Manhattan Beach was a pioneer in stepping out ahead and banning that both in restaurant use and for sale off the shelf in retail establishments, and set the pace. And San Francisco recently upped the ante by including packaging polystyrene, not only for shipping like computer monitors and things like that, but also expanded in the food service area where meat, fish, and poultry trays are included, as well as egg cartons and packaging peanuts, as they call them, and other polystyrene packaging items. So they have a very comprehensive ban. And the city of Malibu recently just matched San Francisco on that level. So we're looking for equally effective bans just to keep it out of the environment. And as I mentioned, we've worked very strongly with the city of Culver City, and we'll be in Long Beach tomorrow night trying to accomplish the same. And we'll do it if I have to go to every single city in the state of California, I'm going to do that. And we would like to revisit this as both a countywide ban and a statewide ban, which was tried before and narrowly defeated, but we're probably going to come back and try to get it statewide, just like we did with the single-use bag ban.
And I've received two packages already, you know, that are holiday gifts that I bought on the internet. And one of them had the peanuts, the styrofoam peanuts. The other one had the plastic bubble wrap.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you would think they could just have something like cardboard or some other insert to keep things from shaking around during transit.
And in fact, they do. I recently ordered some computer equipment, and it came in boxes with literally rolled up brown wrapping paper as the cushioning, and it was quite effective. And there are other pulp kind of recycled paper items that are used for the more astute manufacturers who will pack it without using polystyrene. So I've seen a lot of that, and we just want to encourage more of it. And one of the challenges was, and it just came up with the Maui County effort, is some of the members of their environmental committee wanted to ban even the import of items with polystyrene packaging. And unfortunately, you know, the county of Maui doesn't have jurisdiction for somebody in some other country or another state that might ship with polystyrene, so we can't include that. But we do ask all the retailers to tell their suppliers, please don't ship with that. So we're trying to get to it indirectly, but hopefully we'll get all the states anyway, and and have this nationwide ban. And I recently finished an analysis of international bans on expanded polystyrene, and believe it or not, in India and Malaysia, they have numerous bans, and they're ahead of us in some areas. So it's recognized worldwide and something we really need to focus on.
And the city of Manhattan Beach has a great environmental program services manager, that being Sona Coffee, who goes around to merchants, well, practically everybody. And it's an outreach program, because I remember when polystyrene was banned in Manhattan Beach, or when it was actually being proposed, and a number of merchants said, well, what are we going to do? I mean, we need this. There's no comparable or economically comparable substitutes, which wasn't true.
Well, in fact, there are many, many substitutes that can be used, and one of the biggest challenges, the plastics industry will go around to small mom-and-pop type restaurants and actually sow fear in them, saying, well, if this ban comes about, you know, it'll really impact your business. And our experience is we have not found one incident, and I ask repeatedly, all the different NGOs we work with, not one incident of a business ever going out of business because of a polystyrene ordinance, nor have they all the ordinances, and I've read them all. I keep track of every single ordinance, and all of them have hardship clauses that if there were unique circumstance where the business was uniquely impacted, they could get an exemption, but we know of no cases where that's actually been used. So the fear that it's going to impact businesses is misfounded. There are plenty of substitute items. Plus, the fact is that expanded polystyrene, because it's 95% air approximately, is the bottom feeder cost-wise. And but restaurants that use that don't pay for the cleanup. We do as taxpayers, because that unique item creates more mess than others, and we're actually subsidizing the restaurants that use expanded polystyrene food service items, because we pay for the cleanup, they don't. So, yeah, they save a little, and we pay for the rest.
And I remember one merchant that came to me some months after the ban and said, you know, I was so scared to death. And, of course, they were also allowed a phase-out period. So if they had existing inventory under pre-existing contracts, they were allowed to use that out. But then he said, you know, we have these substitutes that are just as good as, you know, styrofoam and, you know, cups and whatever, stirring sticks, things like that. And, you know, it's comparable price, because now everything's mass produced. And so it was great. Now, Craig, I want you to talk about one thing, because people see these cups and they turn it upside down and they see the recycling logo and they think, oh, this is recycled. But that's not true.
That, in fact, they call that the chasing arrows triangle, which the plastic industry is actually changing without the arrows to just a triangle. But that's actually a resin code. It is not a recycle code, as it's mischaracterized. And all it does is tell what materials that item is made out of, and that was designed for recycling purposes, so that the recycling centers could separate out the different types of plastic to recycle. But it does not mean that it's recyclable. In a lot of cases, it's not. And the number 6 is polystyrene, and that's the item we all want to avoid. And some cities recycle that, some don't. But if it's been soiled with food use, then it's not recyclable, and right now it's economically infeasible to even recycle it.
And that's also another common misconception, is that some people would say styrofoam is recyclable, but if it had foodstuffs, food contamination, it can't be recycled. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Powell to the People on the Healthy Life Radio Network.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Welcome back. You're listening to Powell to the People live on the radio. Wayne Powell here, and I'm with environmentalist Craig Cadwallader. Well, during the commercial break, I looked up Earth Day, and it's actually on April 22nd of next year. And I urge everyone to come to Pollywog Park. It's also the 25th anniversary of that event at Pollywog Park. And you'll see Surf Rider, Heal the Bay, and so many great environmental nonprofit organizations. And the city has a great booth. They have the Environmental Hero Awards. They have entertainment. It's great. So mark that down on your calendars. And so we're talking about threats to the ocean, you know, from a pollution standpoint, as well as threats to the environment. Let's talk about cigarette butts. You know, we've now have in Manhattan Beach, it's called Breathe Free. It's a smoke-free policy citywide. I think pretty much the only place you can smoke is in a moving car. And the thing is, you know, people, when we passed the, well, it started out smoking had always been prohibited on the beach. Then it was extended to the parks. Then it was extended, you know, to various, I should backtrack. It had been for years prohibited in restaurants and bars. I still remember the old days before the prohibition, or you go to Germany and other countries. But people were saying, well, if you're having a problem with litter, then just enforce your litter laws. But let me smoke. You know, if I want to hurt myself, that's my problem. Talk about the litter and then the health aspects of it.
Yeah, that's one of my big efforts is to try to get smoking bans in the city. As you mentioned, we did get that in Manhattan Beach, and it was a unique ban in that it does apply to all outdoor areas that, as you mentioned, allowed to smoke in a moving automobile, not stationary, and in a private residence. But out where the public is, it's banned in Manhattan, and we just recently, after many years of work, achieved the same thing in Hermosa Beach. And the problem with cigarette butts, other than the obvious problems that the secondhand smoke is full of chemicals and carcinogens, it's a well-documented lethal product. And quite frankly, there's secondhand and thirdhand smoke where one of the scary statistics I'm aware of is that neonatal care nurses were actually going out to take a smoke break and would come back and handle premature babies. And the cigarette residue on their uniforms, which is called thirdhand smoke, was actually impacting the health of the premature babies. Mm-hmm. And so it's unexpected outcomes like that that people aren't aware of, which shows the danger. And with cigarette butts, every year in September, there is International Coastal Cleanup Day. And the statistics on that, over a third of all trash collected worldwide is cigarette butts. And cigarette butts are, especially the filters that when they've been used, they actually trap all the carcinogens, and we call them toxic time bombs. You can take a cigarette butt and drop it into a fishbowl, and it will kill the fish. And those items get on the beach and in the ocean, and again, they're consumed by wildlife. They don't know the difference between that and a food source, and it does kill the animal that eats them. Now, it was that we didn't have bans on the beach. We did get the smoke-free beach campaign that we ran. I think there's only one location now all the way to the Mexico border that doesn't have a ban. And we started to move inland with it. And there were times when you could smoke in restaurants and bars and whatnot, and also on airplanes. Mm-hmm. And it's well known what the health impacts of this are, but the litter side of it is particularly pernicious because people, for whatever reason, toss their cigarette butts. Obviously, they're nasty and you don't want to hold on to them. So they toss them onto the ground. They get into storm drains. They get on the beach. I actually saw a woman playing with her child just south of the Manhattan Beach Pier, and the child stuck a cigarette butt in its mouth, and she was all shocked and fortunately got it out of his mouth, but I was happy to see that, but she flicked the butt away. And that didn't impact me until a little later, and I realized, well, there's the butt for some other child to potentially pick up or some wildlife to ingest. And so the smoking ban, we would love to get it in every city. Quite frankly, I'd like to breathe free and clean air and not have to breathe someone else's cigarettes. And
that's the thing. Someone always says, well, you know, smokers have rights, and if I want to kill myself, you know, I'm free to do that. This is America. And I say, yes, you have the right to do that to yourself, but not to someone else who chooses to have a healthy lifestyle.
And in fact, there is no law that says that you have a right to smoke. And I think it's you, Wayne, that have said your rights end at the tip of your nose.
That's right.
And I like that because it really is that. And we're concerned that we don't want, you know, I've had friends die. In fact, my older brother died of lung cancer, but I don't want anybody to die from that, whether I know them or not. And I don't want the wildlife impacted by that either. And it is so severe a problem that if you have a third of trash worldwide that's simply involved with an addictive product like that, there's something wrong, and we need to fix that.
And you and I both have seen where there's a receptacle, and maybe just a foot or two away from that are cigarette butts, like somebody was too lazy to dispose of their butts properly.
Yes, and in fact, speaking of that, the Surfrider Foundation South Bay chapter donated $3,000 worth of cigarette butt receptacles to the city of Hermosa Beach in their trial of designated smoking areas. And that really didn't work. And so we took those out, and we did get the citywide outdoor smoking ban similar to Manhattan Beach. And we don't want those sitting around indicating to people that you're allowed to smoke when in fact you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And so that helped a very little bit, but you're right, people were standing right next to them and still throwing the cigarette butts on the ground.
So let's talk about another threat to the beaches and the oceans, and it's the runoff of toxic pesticides and fertilizers that people use on their lawns.
Yeah, one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is storm drain runoff here does not get treated. So what it does is, at best, there's a screen that tries to screen out the larger bits of trash that get caught up in the water. But that water goes directly to the ocean untreated, and that's our playground. And ideally, we would want to capture that water. That's a valuable resource, especially when we're in a drought, and treat it. And I've been working very closely on trying to get more water recycling. And one of the options that has been discussed is capturing stormwater runoff and treating that and putting it back into the potable water supply. And I do water sampling in the Biona wetlands, and we've sampled before and after rain events, and the amount of bacteria that's created on rain is serious, and we've documented it, so that's going in the ocean. We don't want to swim in it.
And the city has an ocean-friendly demonstration garden as well as sustainable landscape. There's one right in front of City Hall. There's one right by the post office, and then there's one on the Strand, but that needs to be worked on a little. It seems like it's seen better days, but that's not really the city's. That's another party that has that. Anyways, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Powell to the People on the Healthy Life Radio Network.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back. Wayne Powell here, and I'm with environmentalist Craig Cadwallader. You know, all the things that I'm mentioning or we're talking about are not unique to just Manhattan Beach. They're, you know, common with all of the beach cities, and the South Bay cities have great environmental programs. And if you want to know a lot about what the city of Manhattan Beach is doing, you can go to their website at citymb.info. And then there's a little tab, and it says Going Green, and there's all kinds of great reference material. Now, one of the priorities, this all got started, I think it was back in 2006 with, the Environmental Task Force Committee. And then they had actually a committee that preceded it, and the name is on the tip of my tongue, but they had a green book and they had a set of initiatives, and it was basically, as a result of the Kyoto Protocol to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And then subsequent to that time, Assembly Bill 32 came out, and it's all to, reduce things that are contributing to climate change. And the city has a number of programs, some people always would say the city should set an example as a leader. Well, the beach cities, they do, with things like green vehicle fleets, hybrids, electric vehicles, electric charging stations, requiring taxi franchises to have hybrid vehicles, all kinds of things. We have, it's called, I believe, the Downtowner that's going to go into effect in January. It's an electric vehicle, sort of like a long golf cart, and there'll be free rides to the members of the public. It's all supported through advertising, but that's going to be eco-friendly. And then there's a number of energy management programs that we'll talk about. But talk about, all of the environmental-friendly things that cities are doing.
Right, and I particularly like the elongated golf carts as they are. I think it's a brilliant program. I hope it's successful and ongoing. And where people, and part of it too, is just getting people out of their cars. And that was an effort that I'm working on with Cameron Brown with the Surfrider Foundation South Bay chapter, who came up with a concept called Bike to Surf, which was to get people out of their cars, and he pledged to ride his bicycle for a year every time he went surfing, and we're going to try to expand that to get the entire South Bay to do something like that. But the idea is to reduce the use of fossil fuel-based vehicles, and some of the examples you cited also include the garbage hauler trucks, which are in natural gas powered and whatnot, to try to reduce the greenhouse gas input of just hauling garbage. And so all these programs that the cities are doing, especially putting in charging stations and making it more convenient for everyday people to be able to switch over from fossil fuel-based transportation to something that's better for the environment. And we would love to see, through some of the programs of community choice aggregation, to shift away from fossil fuel-based power generation to clean power generation that we're hoping LA County will implement on a countywide basis. And just to get away from all the things we're doing that are actually contributing to the very real global warming, in spite of what some politicos may, claim to be the fact. Mm-hmm. It's undisputed. There's no question that it is happening, and we need to do something. And the trouble is, the lead time on these things takes so long to make any kind of an impact. We should have started decades ago, and we have to do it now. And all of these things impact our use. From Surfrider's perspective, we have the impact of global warming, which is sea level rise, and that's impacting all the coasts worldwide. And it is only going to get worse. And as the temperatures rise, the water actually expands as it gets warmer. It changes the acidification of the oceans, which is killing coral and other items. So it's really changing in a very dramatic way our environment. And we simply have to do something to change that. And the fossil fuel contribution to greenhouse gas warming is undisputed. And we need to get away from that and go to these cleaner sources, as you mentioned.
And that entails energy management, thermostats, low wattage consumption of electronics, of course, reducing, reusing, recycling. But at the end of the day, it is always having renewable energy sources, less reliance on fossil fuels, more reliance, or perhaps migrating to zero waste.
And that, and ideally, would be the solution. We have, especially here in Southern California, we have plenty of sunshine, so solar power is great. There are places where you can do wind power. There are experiments being done with wave power, although personally I do not want to see any waves interfered with a power generation device. But there are geothermal power, so there are all these alternatives, which quite frankly, in my opinion, create many more jobs and new industry development than building another offshore oil rig or something, which is a real threat potentially coming up. And we need to do it smarter, and we need to do it faster. And it really will make a difference if we start collectively moving away from the fossil fuel base and do these things, make use of the resources we already have.
Green is the new gold, as they say.
Yes.
You know, there is just so much you can do that, you know, if everybody did just a little bit in the aggregate, you know, and I had previously the Grades of Green folks on one of my shows. They teach the kids in school, you know, zero waste, the 3 R's. Actually, there's now, they call it 4 R's, reduce, reuse, recycle, and rethink. And, you know, they talk about all of the programs because the kids teach their parents very well. What was that Crosby, Stills, Nash song, you know, teach your children well. But it's amazing those programs that they have. And, you know, and when it spreads and goes multi-generational, in the aggregate, it's great for our planet.
And in fact, I am a judge with Grades of Green on the Trash Free Lunch Challenge. So I have gone out to these schools and witnessed this firsthand. And it is truly amazing what these kids are doing. And I met last Wednesday morning with students from Adams Middle School in Redondo Beach who, on their own, are taking the initiative to do some environmental project that will make a difference. And I got to tell you, when you talk to those kids, it gives me renewed hope that, you know, we do have a future, because they get it and they're doing whatever they can to make an impact. And in a lot of cases, they're taking that information home and educating their parents. And I think it's a wonderful cooperative thing. Just about everything I do, I'm fully aware of the future generations that I want to make it better for them. And so when you see them in action, it's huge. And, you know, Grades of Green is a program that is just amazing. We've gone to all these different middle schools and high schools, and to see how proud the kids are and eager to volunteer to separate out the waste during lunch is just really inspiring. So it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. In the city of Manhattan Beach, like Redondo Beach, Hermosa Beach, and indeed other cities in the South Bay, have sustainable building standards where you have to use a certain percentage of recycled materials. You know, you have to reduce some of the things that you shouldn't be building with. All of the energy efficiency, you know, measures are incorporated into the building codes. That would be the subject of an entire show. But first, we have to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Powell to the People, live on the radio. Wayne Powell here, and I'm with longtime environmentalist Craig Cadwallader. One thing that I want to mention, today is Monday, December 19th. So if you're watching, if you're listening to this in real time, tomorrow at the Manhattan Beach City Council meeting, so that's Tuesday, December 20th, there's a very important agenda item, and it's agenda item number 10, and that is, there's going to be a presentation by Southern Cal Gas Company, and this is something that I've requested, and twice previously they've come unprepared, so hopefully the third time will be a charm. but it's regarding the Playa del Rey natural gas storage facility. Now, I know many of you have seen in the news what happened at Aliso Canyon and quite a few residents of Porter Ranch had to leave their homes for a long period of time due to the toxic natural gas leak. Well, guess what? Playa del Rey storage facility has 2.6 billion, and that's with a B, 2.6 billion cubic feet of natural gas stored in 54 wells that were built, between the 1930s and 1942. And only 9 of the 54 wells have subsurface safety valves. Well, that was the same problem that they had at Aliso Canyon. And one of the things that I've been trying to do is to get the gas company to come out and explain what they're going to do about that situation. They've had, you know, various regulatory agencies that have been doing numerous inspections, and they've had continual leaks and mechanical failures. And many people would describe the scenario as an accident waiting to happen. If you have an opinion, you should come to the council meeting during the public hearing, or, you know, you can always email the city council at citycouncil@citymb.info. This is a very important matter, and without the, you know, subsurface safety valves, if there's a leak, there's going to be no way to stop it, and it'll be a protracted period of time. Eventually they will, of course, but as we saw from Aliso Canyon, it took time. And it's a very simple solution. Just have safety valves retrofitted. Do you have some thoughts, Craig, on that?
Yeah, I'm particularly interested in that. I do water sampling regularly in the Biona wetland treatment wetlands, and I'm actually out walking around on top of that subsurface area, and very close to where the treatment wetlands are is the facility that Southern California Gas uses to inject and remove the natural gas that they store underground. And in 2013, I believe it was, there was a release and fire there, and I regularly see wildlife photographers out in the wetlands when I'm doing the water sampling, and one of whom told me, "Are you aware that I wasn't there that day?" But he said, "There was an explosion and fire here from the gas facility," and he actually captured a photograph of that and sent it to me, and you can see the flames shooting very high into the air. And there were press articles on that. And that's the sort of thing that if that were to go out of control, obviously the impact would be severe. And that's in a, you know, right in Playa Vista, which is, very close to one of the biggest cities in the country. So that is a potential impact. And there are old wells that they should have cutoff valves. And you know, it seems like some of the utility companies won't do something until it's a crisis. And if we were to suffer a situation like Aliso Canyon and Playa Vista, the impact could be quite devastating. And we'd much rather see a proactive approach on that so that we prevent a problem before it happens. And yes, to have the reserves of natural gas while we're still hooked on fossil fuels is required, but to do it safely is a thing, and that's why I so much appreciate your attention to that, because it is a concern, and quite frankly, I'd hate to be out there taking water samples and get cooked by some, you know, rogue flame that came out from a leak. But
What happened when the release of at Aliso Canyon, not only was it toxic, carcinogenic natural gas that was harmful to people, but also the effect that it had on the environment.
The greenhouse gas contribution of that was just really tragic. And that we can't have that. We have the problem is severe now. To have something like that repeat itself would really have a severe impact, and we just simply cannot afford to let that happen.
So as everyone knows, and now I'm shifting gears to another topic, we have a drought and there's strict water conservation measures in effect. And, they're doing recycling of water for irrigation purposes. That brings up the issue of a proposed desalination plant in El Segundo at the NRG facility. And it's right at the border of El Segundo and Manhattan Beach. You would think that on the face of it, desalination sounds like a good thing, but I know you have concerns.
I have very severe concerns. Desalination is, in our opinion, the last choice you pick when you're trying to find new water sources. We can conserve more, we can recycle more, and we can just simply use less. And desalination is the most energy inefficient, most costly option to get potable drinking water. And quite frankly, right now, the West Basin Water District is actually a world leader in recycling technology, and I consider them actually a partner of ours. They do give grants to the Surfrider Foundation South Bay chapter to do the water sampling I just talked about, for instance, in the Biona wetlands in 18 locations up and down the coast. My concern with this is West Basin currently recycles 40 million gallons per day of Hyperion wastewater. Hyperion is dumping 230 million gallons a day into the bay. We'd like to see them recycle all of that and not build the desal plant.
And that would also save ratepayers and taxpayers money because the desal plant is quite costly. Well, guess what? We're getting near the end of the show, unfortunately. We'll be right back to wrap things up. You're listening to Powell to the People on the Healthy Life Radio Network.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Powell to the People. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guest, Craig Hadwalader. This has been very informative. Next week, we have musician Kevin Sousa, who will be performing some of his hit songs, and I look forward to another exciting show. I want to thank you for listening to Powell to the People, and I want to leave you with a thought. Kindness is the most beautiful person in the world, no matter what you look like. Including me. I have a radio face. This is Wayne Powell sending you positive thoughts and good wishes. Have a great week and happy holidays. We'll see you back next Monday, same time, same place. Until then, bye for now.